The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
It might be nice to start as people are still coming in. If you have any questions about the practice you've done so far, or the instructions I gave last week, or anything to do with what we're doing. Yes?
My schedule's really busy, and I'm having trouble finding the self-discipline to just to do the 20 minutes every day. I've missed quite a number of days and feeling a little frustrated about that. I'm not quite sure what that's about, but yeah. I don't know if it's a question, but how can I find more self-discipline just to do it anyway, even with such a busy schedule?
I don't know. You know, there's a variety of things that occurs to me. One is that you'll do what's most important for you. And so this, you know, is this important enough for you? And maybe in the kind of life you're living, maybe it doesn't fit in the scale of what you need. Or maybe it is important enough. If it's really important, if it's super important, you'll do it. You know, no doubt about it. So where does it fit in the scale? And what's your priorities? That's one. The other is has a lot to do with how much you enjoy it. If you enjoy it enough, you'll probably do it also. And so is there some way you can engage in it that's not a duty, for example, obligation, but something's more enjoyable, more like play even? And maybe that will make it easier for you.
Do you recommend doing it more or less the same, say, like a certain time every day?
That's what I usually recommend, same time, same place and all that. But if life is busy maybe that's not realistic. Maybe it's realistic to just figure out, look ahead through the day and say, well, today I can do it at 2 o'clock. You know, my wife used to do it, at lunchtime she used to meditate with some colleagues in a very large storage closet at the organization she worked for. They would gather in this big closet and close the door, and they'd be left alone at lunchtime. That was their way of doing it. You know, one of the most interesting things of what you said, you talked about being frustrated, and it's reasonable to be frustrated. You want to do something, you don't end up doing it. It's a reasonable thing. But maybe there's something valuable for you to look at the relationship you have with meditation, and your relationship you have with accomplished things, doing things, being disciplined. And maybe there's some way, rather than, maybe there's something important for you to learn about relaxing around this. So that even if you don't do it, you don't frustrate it. Just matter of fact, oh, I didn't do it. It's important for me. I think I'll try to figure out how to do it. Maybe it's unfortunate I couldn't do it, but the frustration is a lot of extra stuff. As we'll talk about today, how we add a lot of extra baggage on top of what could be very simple. And part of what mindfulness is training us to do is to learn to be simple with what goes on. But as we become simple, we have much more choice and much more at ease with how we go through. And if you're more at ease, maybe that you'll find an easier way to do this. Does that make some sense?
Yeah.
So any other questions anybody has? It all seems so clear.
You've talked about softening the belly. And I find when I soften the belly, my spine starts slumping. So I'm not really, I've played a lot with it, and I'm not having a lot of success with it.
Well, you might be useful to look at your posture. Maybe at the end of the class today, I can look and see how you sit. Because the primary strength for your spine is in having a strong lower spine, the bottom. If you have some strength in your lower curve of your back, then it's possible to keep this relaxed.
So, well, I have that from classical piano training, so I'm
holding your belly in?
Holding the belly in while I keep my spine straight.
Okay, then keep doing it. You know, and then we'll see how it goes over time. You know, at some point it might be a limiting factor, but until it does, you know, if that's what you've been trained to do and it's deeply ingrained habit. Okay. So what I'd like to do today is to first do a very brief meditation with you, maybe like 4 or 5 minutes to make a point, and then to give some more of the instructions I'll give, and then do another meditation that's goes into more depth. And the short meditation has to do with the balance between being relaxed and being alert, being attentive. And the idea is that meditation is to have both operating together. And many people can be very alert, and they're kind of hyped up. They're super alert and not very relaxed. Or people are so relaxed that there's no vigilance and no paying attention. They kind of drift off, and the mind wanders off into daydream, or they fall asleep or something. And very few people know how to kind of keep that balance of both at the same time. But the idea of meditation is to keep both. And if you keep both balanced, both operating together in tandem, then the depth of your relaxation is much deeper than even sleep. But you have to keep, the alertness there as well. And the alertness becomes very, very strong. It's only akin to what some people might have if they're like suddenly, I don't know if a startle is the right word, but many people are not that alert until they get kind of startled by something. You can be so super pristinely present and aware, but you're not tense like you would be if you were startled. You're also very deeply relaxed. So this is kind of the upper reaches of what meditation is possible, a deep relaxation and alertness. So one of the ways to, it takes time to develop that and learn it, but one of the ways that kind of leads to that is being attentive, being alert to when the mind wanders off in thought. The mind wanders off, and you want to be alert enough to try to catch it as soon as you can. The mind will wander off in thought. That's what minds do. And it's not a failing on your part. It's not a personal fault, shortcoming of yours. It's just what minds do. And our job as meditators is to learn to work with that in a skillful way without being troubled by it, without feeling bad because it happens, without, attacking our thoughts or something, but to learn to be wise with it. And so I prefer the language of surfing with it. So, the surfer doesn't, out there on the wave, doesn't attack the wave, bad wave, or sort of stop the wave, or I don't know what the surf, But you catch the wave, and then you can kind of ride the wave. So you don't want to catch your thoughts in the sense of being carried away by the thoughts, but you want to kind of work with it that kind of gentle way. So you want to kind of notice as soon as you can the mind wanders off, and with time you'll catch it. You'll notice just as you begin to wander off. You're a beginner at all this. You might notice after some seconds or some time, I've been thinking for a while, let's come back. But with time, you kind of notice just the very kind of leaning into starting to think, you'll notice. So you want to try to be alert enough to notice when the mind wanders off. And then in a relaxed, forgiving way as possible, but with some determination, some gentle, calm determination, come back to the breath or come back to the present. Make sense? So what I'd like to do is spend about 5 minutes doing this. And so in this meditation, all you're going to be asked to do is to try to keep your attention in the present moment on the breathing. And it doesn't matter how well you're with the breath. This is not like you have to do it really well. Actually, it's better if you don't do it very well. And then be alert to notice when your mind leaves the breath, when the mind leaves and goes off into thought. And when you can see if you can notice that tendency and then come back, let go of it and come back and establish yourself on the breath. And the next time you wander off, catch that and come back and see if you can, how quickly you can catch it when the mind wanders off and what it's like and what it feels like and what, how to pay attention and what happens when you let go or try to let go and come back. And just be curious about what goes on there. That makes some sense? Okay, so take a comfortable meditation posture for these 5 minutes. And gently close your eyes. And just to get established with your breathing, you might take a couple of deep breaths. And then let your breathing become normal. And then try to stay alert enough to notice when the mind wanders off in thought. And when that happens, just say the word to yourself, thinking, and then come back. And in the last couple of last few seconds here, just reflect what that was like. You can review those few minutes of doing that. What was it like for you? How alert were you to notice the beginning of wandering off? So what was that like? What was kind of unique or unusual about noticing when the mind wandered off?
So I found that at the beginning, with every single breath, my mind would wander off right at the top of the breath, just like, you know, When I'm speaking, I take a breath and then speak. It felt like I took a breath and then thought, and took a breath and then thought, and then took a breath and then thought, and thought about thinking, and thought about what I was going to say once I got the mic.
Great, thank you.
I have this image of skipping stone, just very short periods of concentration and sort of agreeing with what you're saying. Skipping stone, just not unpleasant, but sort of like a hyperactive child, I guess.
Uh-huh. Great.
It was really hard for me at first. It was wandering a lot, and I think the thing that's hard for me is that it's hard for me to put my finger on what it feels like to be in that state where my mind isn't wandering. So I can sort of tell when the wandering happens, and then I know what it's like to think about the breathing, but the in-between is what's hard. But somehow I got better as time went on in that thing, and that always happens for me, and I wonder if eventually I'll get to where it's right away easier. I don't know.
If you keep it up, yes. Was it easy to let go? And then you start thinking right away, or some of you find it difficult to let go of your thoughts, the thoughts were hanging on for dear life? Up here in the front.
I felt like it was more difficult towards the end to let go. At the beginning, I felt like I was very vigilant. There's one, there, I thought, there, thought, 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 and I was pointing them out, and then towards the end of it, I realized that I was thinking about something almost fully before I recognized it.
Uh-huh.
I found my chin going up and would bring it down.
Thank you. So maybe one more over here on the side.
What do you call a thought?
A thought can be a mental verbalization, the inner voice kind of saying things, anything at all. Or it could also be images.
Image.
It could also, but some people think more in images. At least in our kind of scene, we differentiate. We say that the thinking has two forms: thinking in words and thinking in images. So if it's an image, it's the same thing. Let go of it and come back to the breath.
How do you know when you're not thinking? I mean, I know it sounds like a dumb question, but I mean, I found myself, you know, doing what you were saying, but then. Is it just like all of a sudden when you start thinking about something, you identify it, thinking, and then say, oh, for the last minute I wasn't aware that I was thinking?
Yeah, there's a funny thing that happens. Sometimes in calm meditation, the mind can be very, very calm and peaceful, and the mind says, I'm not thinking anything right now. and you believe it. But the reason for that, it's interesting, the reason for that is that there are different levels, so different kinds of thinking that we do. And so there's discursive thinking. And discursive thinking is when you're having a conversation with someone, or you're planning out what you're going to do for the future, or you're remembering the past. You're having, it's much more involved and engaged. And that's the kind of thinking that's the most problematic for meditation, because that takes you out. There can be much more subtle thinking, more relaxed thinking, that is almost not thinking at all. That's a very simple recognition of what's going on. There's a sound outside, and in order to recognize that as a sound, there's some cognitive activity that's kind of akin, or is kind of a thinking. And it's a different level. It's much more primitive in a sense, or simple. It doesn't agitate the mind. Whereas discursive thinking pulls the mind along, can be a lot of emotions and reactions built into or around discursive thoughts. So with meditation, discursive thinking can come to a complete stop. You're not talking about anything, you're not thinking about anything else outside, but there can still be very simple thinking going on. It feels like it's not thinking at all. And some people won't even recognize it as thought, and some people will see it as a very subtle thinking, where you say, oh, I'm not thinking at all. And what it means is I'm not having a discursive thought. I'm not at that coarser level of thinking that I'm usually operating all the time. But it's just a very simple recognition. And so, if you get too caught up in noting every possible thought like that, then you wrap yourself up in kind of infinite regress, and it's not so useful. And the exercise I gave you here now was meant to just kind of show you some territory, show you an area. Not that you're supposed to have this hypervigilance, to notice every time you think, part of what you need to do if you're going to meditate is to start being a little bit more alert enough to notice when the mind has wandered off into discursive thinking, or when it gets lost in an image. I remember there are times when I've kind of had a whole panorama of a play, a whole stage and all the characters, and I'm involved in this whole drama, So it's not exactly discursive thinking in terms of words, but it's pretty elaborate what I'm looking at. I'm in the play, not in the present moment. So to notice when the mind goes off in that, because when the mind goes off, when attention goes off into discursive thinking, the attention you have is not useful anymore for applying yourself to the present moment, applying yourself to the breath or whatever you're paying attention to. What we're trying to do in mindfulness meditation is to begin utilizing our attention for the purpose we set it to do, to be present in the present moment, to really notice what's going on here. And if you don't take some charge of your attention, your discursive mind's going to hijack it. It's going to kidnap your attention, and you'll wake up, Have you ever had, you wake up, Have you ever had the experience? I hope I'm not the only one. It's kind of embarrassing. Driving on the freeway, and then realize, uh-oh, my exit is back there. I was just so involved in my thought that I didn't even really know where my exit was. Where am I? So that can happen in meditation, right? So to be alert enough to notice when the mind wanders off is really important. Sooner or later, you'll notice that the mind has wandered off. But it's best if you don't wait 10 minutes. The idea is to catch it earlier. If you try to jump on every possible wandering away, then you'll stay tense. You don't want to be a perfect meditator. It's really important. Those of you who are perfectionists shouldn't do this, or should relax about it, because if you try to be a perfect meditator, you won't meditate. The perfect meditator is the one who's not so perfect at it, because you have to be relaxed enough. So sometimes we say that 60% of your 60% effort is better than 99% effort. Exactly where you are is because you need that balance of being relaxed and being alert. So you have to find that balance. One of the advantages of starting to notice how the mind wanders off in thought is the wandering mind is closely akin to the reactive mind. The mind that reacts to things is often closely connected to discursive thinking, evaluation, judgments of what's going on. That can happen very, very fast. But if you can start noticing how the mind wanders off, you'll also start noticing how the mind wanders into reactivity. And this is a really important aspect of the mindfulness practice. So I'll tell a story that comes from the Buddha. The Buddha was gathered with some people, some students, and he said to them, "If this is, you know, 2,500 years ago, he said, if someone takes an arrow, a bow and arrow, and shoots an arrow at a man, is that going to hurt the man?" And the people in the audience said, "Oh yeah, that'll hurt." And then if you take a second arrow and shoot that at the man, will that hurt even more? "Oh yeah, that'll hurt even more. I get hit by a second arrow." And the Buddha said, "The first arrow is what life brings you. The second arrow is what you shoot at yourself. So if I'm walking down the street and I stub my toe in the, you know, in a rock or something, that kind of thing happens. That's life happens like that. You know, we stub our toe or something. And so that's the first arrow. The second arrow is me saying, Gil, you are the world's worst walker. You're an embarrassment to walking human beings. You should go to remedial walking class. You're a bad person. And you really need to kind of hide yourself and maybe get some kind of, I don't know, a unicycle so no one can ever see you. You know." And the mind wanders off. And it not only wanders off into thought and plans about unicycles or whatever, but also there's this kind of these arrows pointing at me. I'm bad. I'm terrible. I hope no one noticed. This is, you know, I better come up with a good excuse to explain why, you know, I don't know. So there's a lot of things can happen in life that just happen, that are unfortunate, that are uncomfortable. And what the mindfulness can do is to help us not to add the second arrow, or at least not the third arrow, or at least not the fourth arrow. Or at some point, you know, we can stop the cycles, because sometimes there's an endless kind of cycles of arrows. So I'm walking down the street, I stub my toe, I'm angry with myself. "Gil, you're a terrible walker." And then I notice, well, you know, I've been doing this meditation practice for a long time, I shouldn't get angry. And I'm really a klutz, and then I get more angry with myself. And then I say, "Wait a minute, I'm a meditation teacher, this is embarrassing, I should be so caught up." And so that embarrassment is like the third arrow. And then I say, "Oh, this is hopeless. You know, I don't know if I can manage it, I just get depressed." That's the fourth arrow. And then I get, you know, and then I just feel, you know, so, you know, I don't know, just go on and on, right? At some point, we use our mindfulness to just notice what's happening, and we don't add a next generation of arrows. Just leave it alone. Leave it alone. This is how it is. I've added five arrows, and if I say, "Oh, shoot, that's terrible," that's the sixth arrow. Just leave it. Leave it alone. And so, ideally, you can leave it alone after the first arrow. You stub your toe and, oh, that's, the mind wanders off, and you just let it be that way. The mind wanders off and you are angry with yourself for having a wandering mind, that's a second arrow. Make sense? So what we try to do in meditation is to be attentive enough to begin relaxing those second and third and fourth arrows, so we can just be simple with what's here and just allow things to be as they are. So we sit in meditation and all kinds of things can happen. You can have a thought which is beautiful, you can have a thought which is ugly. And we just try to let it be. Simple about it. "Oh, look at that, it's a thought." As opposed to, "Oh, poor me," or "great me." Some arrows are coated in honey. We say, you know, like, you know, so we have this beautiful thought. "Wow, you know, I'm going to be the next saint of Redwood City." And we latch onto that. And so also there can be emotions. And we can have emotions that are, you know, there can be emotions which are, you know, painful to have. There are emotions that are beautiful to have. Can we just keep it simple? Just let it be as it is and not add other arrows, not add reactivity to it. So if you're angry, just be angry in a simple way. When you're doing mindfulness meditation, just be mindful of your anger and be attentive. Can you do that without adding another arrow? The arrow being, you know, "I'm a terrible person," or "this is, you know, let me justify this," or whatever it might be. We add these things to it. And so the call of mindfulness meditation, or the request of mindfulness meditation, is to try to be simple with what is occurring for you. And stay in the present of what's occurring and be simple. Don't make a big deal of it. The deal we try to make is to know what it is, to notice it, not to react to it. Make some sense? Okay. So the first week that we're here, I talked about being mindful of the breath. And the breath is kind of the center of all this. And now I talked about, last week I talked about the body, being mindful of the body, the bodily experience. And then today I'm going to talk about mindfulness of emotions. Next week I'm going to talk much more about mindfulness of thinking. And a little bit, it's kind of like we're going in, concentric circles going in. So the body's kind of like relatively coarse. The breath is an activity, it's a movement. And then, so it's when you're sitting still, that's the coarsest thing going on, the movement of the breath moving. And then as we, and then the body itself, the body sensations become a little closer in to who, you know. And now we get into the emotions, which are much closer into what makes us tick, what makes us work. It's kind of closer to, you know, who we are in some ways, from some people, closer in the body. And a suggestion I have here is that perhaps thinking is even closer in. The fifth week we'll go into what we call the quality of the mind, or the mind itself, which is even closer in to the to kind of something very intimate and personal. And so we're kind of going, kind of learning to be present for our experience in such a way that as we track it, as we're present for it, we can find our way into something that's very, very intimate within us. Something's very precious, very still and beautiful. But the process of doing that is the process of paying attention to what is here. So today the task is to get some sense of how to work with emotions when they arise. So for that, I would like to do some of this in a meditation session. So if you could, again, if you want to stand for a minute or so, if you feel like you need to stretch. So, so we begin by giving some attention to the posture and sitting up a little bit more upright than you usually would, trying to find a balanced posture, and then gently closing your eyes. And then before we go any further, check in with yourself and notice how you're feeling. Any way you're feeling is okay. Just notice. Tired, alert, impatient, patient, calm or agitated. Anxious, contented, notice how you are, and then see if you can be okay with how you're feeling. Not before, against it, not have arrows about it, to be very simple. Noticing how you're feeling, your mood or your mental state, your emotional state. And notice how your body experiences your emotional state, your mood. How does it sit in your body, manifest in the body? And then consider a little bit here, how might your emotional state impact or influence your meditation, your efforts to meditate? Are you likely to be pulled into your emotional state or how you're feeling? Are you likely to be affected by it and how you pay attention? So then now take a couple of long, slow, deep breaths. And as you breathe in deeply, feel how your torso and ribcage expands and stretches, and how as you exhale, there's relaxation of the ribcage, the shoulders, torso. As you exhale, let yourself settle in more deeply into your body. And then let your breathing return to normal. And as you exhale, see if you can soften or relax some of the different muscle groups in your body. Perhaps the muscles around your forehead and eyes. Perhaps you can soften your jaw. Perhaps you can soften your shoulders. And if it's helpful or useful, perhaps you can soften your belly. Within your body, as part of your bodily experience, become aware of how the body experiences breathing. And notice where it's most comfortable or most compelling to experience the rhythm of breathing in and breathing out. Try to hang in there, stay there in that place. Watch what happens with the breathing, with the body. Stay with the rhythm, the alternation. Being attentive enough that you notice when the mind wanders off into discursive thinking. And then gently remind yourself to come back to the experience of breathing. Might be helpful to very, very softly say thinking when you're acknowledging the wandering mind. It might help you to come back to the breath with a little bit more clarity. And then come back and try to hang in there with the experience of breathing. Remembering you're not supposed to be perfect. And then as we continue sitting here, let go of your breathing, paying attention to it. And instead, notice now how you're feeling. What's your mood, your emotional state, your mental state? Are you relaxed or tense, calm or agitated? Are you patient, impatient? Anxious or contented? Are you feeling aversive? Are you feeling more open and receptive? Happy or sad? There's always some mood or mental state or emotional state. It might be quite subtle at times. And if you can't identify exactly what you're feeling, maybe you can at least feel it rather than identify it. And see if you can feel it or be present for it without any reactivity, without any ideas of for, against, should or shouldn't. And let how you're feeling just kind of be here freely, as if it has permission to be here. And as it's here, you feel it more fully. And notice if there's any place in your body that the emotional state shows itself, that manifests, or any place in your body which are energized, activated because of this, how you're feeling. Could be in the belly, in the chest, in the hands, the face, shoulders, the neck, the back. And if you find some physical manifestation of how you're feeling, physical place where it's experienced, bring your attention carefully to that place in your body. And notice what's there. Notice what sensations. Notice the energy that's there. Notice what's going on. Notice how easy or difficult it is to allow how you're feeling to be there without reactivity. And then metaphorically, take a step back in your mind so you're not in how you're feeling, but you're watching it. You are not what you're feeling, but you're watching what you're feeling. And then come back to your breathing. And for the last 2 minutes here, hang in there with your breathing. Stay present for breathing, letting your attention enter into the world of breathing in and breathing out. And then taking a couple of deep breaths. And then when you're ready, you can open your eyes. Mindfulness meditation, at its essence, is noticing what's happening as it's happening. And to notice it without reactivity, without second arrows, letting what's happening to be there in a simple way. Your job is simply to know it better. Over time, as you do this as a meditation practice, you'll learn how phenomenally trustable it is to allow your inner life, to allow what's going on within you, to just come and be there without needing to change it or fix it or react to it. And so it's a very simple thing we're trying to do, but it's very profound. Simply allowing our experience to be what it is and see it clearly for what it is. And to learn how to bring attention to it to get to really take it in, see it more deeply. So we train ourselves first with breathing. Breathing is a great, focusing on the breath is a great way of centering ourselves. It's a great way of kind of settling down, agitated mind, spinning around all the concerns of the day. And slowly, over time, the mind quiets and settles down, usually. If, however, something is really compelling that makes it difficult for you to stay with the breathing, then the instructions are to let go of the breath, focusing on the breath, and turn your attention to that which is making it difficult to be present for the breath. So if you have strong sensations in your body, if you try to stay with the breath, but those strong sensations are pulling your attention, then you have a tension between what you're trying to do and what's demanding attention. And that tension is not useful for meditation. So in our tradition, we say there are no distractions. There's just something else to pay attention to. So you would simply let go of the breath and bring your attention carefully, meditative attention, to those strong sensations in your body. If there are strong sounds outside, you would do the same thing. You just let go of the breath and just do listening meditation until it's no longer compelling. And then you can go back to your breathing. If there are emotions, we do the same thing. If the emotions are compelling, we turn our attention and we do emotion meditation, where we actually acknowledge and are present for what we're feeling emotionally. If we don't do that, if we don't bring our emotions into attention, emotions can kind of be in the background or in the foreground. They can be, and really have a big influence on us. They can pull us, they can hijack us, we can get pulled into their world that the emotions are part of. They can color how we see things and understand things. They can make us prejudiced or biased in how we kind of see something, what's going on. You know, so if you're in an irritated mood, angry mood, and sit down to meditate, every breath is just like a lousy breath. You know, just you have this irritation. You know, it's like this. Just bad. You know, and you carry with us that irritation to what we're seeing. So when the emotion is strong and compelling enough that it's difficult to stay with the breath, then we turn to the emotion and do emotion meditation. Be mindful of the emotion. The trick with emotions is that if they're compelling and strong, they're often, not always, but they're often connected to some story, some event or something. And so many people, if they focus on an emotion, will accidentally, I don't know if that's the right word, but actually not focus so much on the emotion, but focus on the story connected to the emotion. So I'm sitting here, I notice I feel angry. And so I bring my attention to my anger. But I don't pay attention to the anger that's here and now in the present moment. I start remembering my boss and what she said to me today and what I'm going to say tomorrow. And, you know, and then I just work myself up into a lather. You know, is that the right word? So the trick in meditation is not to get swept into the story, but to stay with what's actually current here and now. And that stays a lot simpler. If you get involved in the story, you probably add gasoline to the fire. But if you can stay with just how it feels here, like the example of anger, just you feel the anger. And it might take a while to train yourself to just let the anger just be simple. Just allow yourself to be angry without being adding second, third, and fourth arrows to it, without judging yourself, without saying, I shouldn't be angry, I'm at a meditation center, all these serene, beautiful people, and I'm the only one who's angry, this is terrible, I'm an embarrassment to Buddhism. And you know, and the mind goes off into these different arrows. But rather to just be angry. And what I like to say, that when you sit down in meditation, it's probably the most appropriate, the safest place in the world to have rage. If that's what you, it's also the safest and best place to have beatific feelings of compassion for the whole humanity. Whatever bubbles up has permission to be here when we meditate. There's no idea in Buddhism that when you sit and meditate that you're supposed to censor or stop what you're feeling, that it's wrong to feel certain things. There are some people who feel that, and some people coming out of certain religious backgrounds have an aversive relationship to joy. Somehow joy is, you shouldn't feel joyful, especially if it's connected to your body. And so it's something sinful or wrong. And so in Buddhism we have no idea like that at all. If there's joy bubbling up, allow it to be there. Or some people have very strong feelings about other emotions, like maybe anger, for example. I shouldn't feel angry. Or strong emotions about lust, desire. If desire bubbles up, oh, I shouldn't be doing that. The idea here is you don't get involved. You don't get involved in the fantasy, the story, the memories connected to it, but you try to stay very present to just the living experience here and now of what these feelings are like. So the first thing is to recognize that now it's time to pay attention to an emotion because it's compelling enough. It's helpful to just notice, okay, something's going on. The second is to allow it to be there. And that's a training in itself. It takes a while for many people to learn to just allow their emotional state to just be there without the reactivities, being for or against, trying to fix it, make it better, hold on to it. Just let it be. Allow it to be. It can be very helpful in this process of letting it be to label it, to give it a name. In our tradition, a very useful tool that we use is called mental noting. And this is using a kind of a thought to help us meditate. It is a very rudimentary, primitive thought, just simply identifying what it is and then and labeling it as such. So like when we're breathing, you might breathe, label in, out. It doesn't take a lot of thinking to realize that's an in when you breathe in or an out when you breathe out. But it's a little nudge. It helps you to stay present. If you are feeling an itch, to say itch, itch, very softly in the mind, as a way of just stay there with that. You might say, keep saying it, in an easygoing way. So you stay present. It might make it less like for the mind to wander off into thought. And you're giving the thinking mind something to do, because an idle mind will get in trouble. So it's very simple. As the mind wanders off in thought, you label it wandering, wandering. And then you come back. So if you're having an emotion, whatever it might be, you would label it. Very simply, obvious. You know, if you don't think of, you don't want to think about what the label might be. Just whatever seems obvious. But you know, if you feel joyful, say joy. Feel calm, calm. Angry, anger. Irritated, irritated. Sad, sad. Whatever. You might say it a number of times. With emotions, so it keeps you present. But with emotions, it's very useful because there's something in the alchemy or the chemistry of emotions that if you identify what it is, it tends to take some of the identification we have away. It tends to take some of the power, energy around it away from it. The energy of identification or of involvement or something. It's like taking a step back and observing it rather than being in the middle of the fray. It's kind of like the old fairy tales where if you name the dragon, the dragon loses its power. Or in some countries, you know, you're not supposed to tell people your birth name because then they have some power over you. And the power is the power of identification, the power of that kind of involvement. So it's something can be very powerful, but just by naming fear, and seeing if you can name it from a place of being more the observer rather than swept up by it, stepping back. And then it's very useful to drop and investigate the actual living experience of that emotion. If it's a strong, compelling emotion, chances are you'll find some place in the body that's activated, energized, because you're having this emotion. And we, you know, it's like, you know, it was gut-wrenching. It's, you know, you felt all this fear, and it's in the gut, right? The stomach gets all tied up in knots. Or you have butterflies in your stomach is an expression. Or, you know, some people feel things in their chest, you know, you feel your heart in a certain way. A variety of things might happen in your heart when you feel loving or kind or something, compassion. Or you might feel it in your face. Your face gets hot or tense. Or perhaps there's a smile. You feel joy and you feel kind of the wonderful, light, delightful kind of tingling energies of joy someplace in your around your lips or your cheeks or different places. For most emotions, you probably wouldn't know you were having the emotion or what kind of emotion it was unless there was some physical corollary that went along with it. It was always there. It takes for some people some time to understand that, to see that, to learn to read their body. One of the things we try to do in this meditation practice is to drop down into the body as much as we can, as often as we can. So if we're feeling an emotion, then we kind of, where am I feeling in the body? And then bring, and then do mindfulness of the body in that area, like we talked about last week. So if you have this, you know, tightness in your belly, go down there and just feel that tightness. Don't try to fix it. Don't be against it. No need to have second arrows. No need to be judgmental about having a tense belly. Just go down there and just feel it as if it's, as if your belly has permission to be tense. But stay present with how things are. If there's some joy that arises, calm arises, and it's compelling enough, feel that calm. It might be more, not so centralized sometimes. It might be kind of a pervasive feeling in the upper torso of kind of warmth and contentment or something. And just kind of feel it and hold that in awareness. One of the things, if you can feel it in your body, then you're much less likely to be caught up in the story connected to the emotion. The body is not a story. We say in Buddhism and other places as well that the body never lies. The mind, the thinking mind, has a capacity for self-deception and making up a story and guessing. But the body never lies. Body always kind of shows what's actually going on. So as we train ourselves to come back into our body, this other kind of truth-telling information is available to us. It's very, very helpful. And it's also a way of kind of stepping back from the mental involvement to feel it in the body. But there's something else about the body that's very, very significant. And say it this way, that as you bring awareness to something, it's kind of like giving it room, giving it space. And if something has space, it has room to unfold for its processing, for the process that it is to move on. The word emotion comes from a Latin word. Prefix means e, means out, and motion means motion, moving out. All emotions are processes. There's something that in process, unless we freeze them, unless we kind of keep them locked in some way. So resentment is frozen anger. And as you bring awareness to the resentment, just hold it. It's okay to be in meditation. It's fine to be resentful. It's maybe the only place. But you go and you feel it, make space for it, and as there's space for it, some of the locks that keep it fixed in place begin to fall away, and the resentment can turn back into anger and then start moving again. And there's an innate wisdom or innate intelligence or something in all emotions. All emotions, if they're left alone, will process themselves, especially the reactive ones. And so So what we're trying to do is we're kind of trying to give room to the experience. It's kind of like, you know, like a spring. If you keep the spring kind of locked up in a box, it can't unwind. But if you take it out of the box, then it can unwind. So one of the very significant ways of doing that is to experience the emotion in its physical form, how it manifests in the body. And just hold it there. Just be attentive there. Feel what goes on there. Notice how it shifts and changes over time. And if you do that, you'll find that you begin making space for it to begin to shift and change. As you pay attention to how an emotion processes, how it changes, there's one of three things that might happen. It can get weaker and smaller. It can get stronger and bigger, or it can stay the same. Your job as a meditator is not to care and not to have an agenda or any judgments about what direction it's supposed to go. Your job is to go along for the ride. So if it gets stronger, say, okay, I'm just here for the ride. I'm just here to experience this. And there's some things that will get stronger before they get weaker. You know, you might notice a little bit of irritation. And so, okay, I'm supposed to be present for that. Let's feel it. And that makes space for the irritation. And it turns out the irritation was just the tip of the iceberg of burning rage. And next thing you know, you're burning up. Okay, so now I'm supposed to be present for this. Gil says it's a safe place for it. So, okay, I'll just let it be. It's the only time in my life. Or it could be strong feelings of love. You know, maybe first it's just some feeling, maybe not so strong, maybe at first it's just some feeling of delight. And then we open to that, and maybe that turns into strong feelings of love. Or perhaps it's a feeling of delight, and you say, great, finally, I had a hard day, I deserve this. I'm going to open to that delight. So you do, and it disappears. Okay, that's how it is. Your job is not to, you know, try not to care. Just be present for what is. Notice what is. And as over time, as you do this, you'll find how trustable, how meaningful and beneficial it is to bring this careful attention to how things are, independent of what you want, independent of what you like it or don't like it. And how there's a very deep process that's very trustable process that goes on within us. If we allow things to unfold in the field of awareness. So emotions are a big part of some people's lives. In Buddhism, we don't repress emotions. And certainly in meditation, we don't express emotions. We don't act on them. We don't get involved in them. We don't celebrate them, any kind. But we do this thing in the middle way, where we don't repress and deny, and we don't act on them. We let them be, and we are attentive to them. We pay attention to them. And there's a huge difference between those two, between repressing or denying or ignoring versus acting on and getting involved in and all that. If you're feeling some kind of so-called negative emotions, maybe it seems good not to act on it. If you're feeling some real delight, you might say, wait a minute, I like to celebrate my emotions. This Buddhism is a party pooper. They're telling me, don't celebrate, just kind of just be present. Yes? It's actually much more profound in meditation to not get involved than it is to get involved and celebrate and enjoy and do all this stuff. It takes you to a deeper place or a fuller place or something. So, any questions about that? Especially if it didn't make sense, the instructions of how to bring attention to emotions. Yes, please. Back on the first row there.
So, I recently, like 2.5 months ago, developed ringing in my ears. And it's constant. So when I try and meditate, when I'm trying to focus on my breath, that's always vying for my attention. So I drifted to it and focused on it. And then that created anxiety because I started thinking, this is never going to go away. How's it?
Right.
You know, and then I started thinking, all right, you're anxious. Focus on the anxiety.
Yes.
And I got swept away in the storytelling for a minute, and then I started saying, thinking. So it took me back to my breathing, and my heart was racing at that point. So are you suggesting when I'm kind of going through those steps that what I should be focusing on is the heart racing or the
yeah.
or the tightness I feel in my breathing? And
yeah, yes, all that's good.
Okay.
And just hold it very, very, very relaxedly as you can. And what is very, you know, meditation might not help the ringing in the ears, but it might help your relationship to it, so that you're not swept into your fears and reactions around it, and it could just be ringing. And I've known people who've had ringing in the ears who had strong reactions to it, and eventually learned that they can just let it just be ringing. It doesn't have to mean anything. It doesn't have to be concerned about the future or whatever, or be irritated by it, and just be ringing. And so for you, if you're new to all this, it might take a while for you to kind of learn the territory of your reactivity, how it all works, until you find a way not to add all these arrows, not to get caught up in it.
So when at the beginning of the meditation, when you would name an emotion, I could find it, every single one. I could sort of... but at the end of the meditation, when you just kind of asked us to find what we were feeling, it really felt to me like a really blank canvas. And like all the emotions were like, you know, they were around the edge of this canvas, and I could go and get them if I wanted to, but that's not what you were saying to do. And yes. So if you're really just, you know, are staring into the blankness, does that mean that stuff is sort of hidden and I haven't found it yet, or just that I'm in a neutral state? Or?
In this meditation, almost generally, we don't worry about things being hidden. We just bring our attention to what's obvious. So if there's no obvious emotions, I wouldn't worry about it. However, maybe there was an obvious... So I used a series of terms. I said emotional state, mental state, mood. So I try to... It's a range of things. And there could be that something was going on here that was quite obvious, but you don't know how to, you didn't recognize it. So some years ago, there was a person who was on a meditation retreat, and she came and talked to for an interview with her meditation teacher, and said, "I'm feeling something really unusual, and I never had this before. It's kind of odd, but I can't tell you exactly what it is." And the teacher said, "Well, just go back and meditate some more and look at it more carefully." So she came back a few days later and said, "Oh, I discovered what it is. And it's something I never had before, so I couldn't really identify it. It's calm." So, you know, in that state that you're describing, was there some level of calm or peace, you know, or even stillness, which, you know, or was it really just kind of a zoned out blank kind of state?
Well, I guess... You know, trying to find the difference between calmness and blankness. Maybe or maybe I just don't have the label.
I wouldn't worry about it. Mm-hmm. If you're meditating and you don't have a lot of emotions or hardly any emotions in meditation, I wouldn't worry about it either. Only be concerned about it if it occurs. Don't be concerned about things that don't occur. I mean, you know. Then we can't call it a second arrow because there wasn't the first. I think it was Mark Twain who said something like, I don't know, maybe it was him, someone, "I've had a lot of problems in my life, most of them which never happened." The imagination is quite powerful. So the, So if you can go a long periods of time where in meditation where you don't do any emotions meditation because nothing happens, but sooner or later something will happen. You know, things happen in life that, you know, and you sit down to meditate, and you know, like if you rob the local bank and try to meditate afterwards, you'll have some emotions. you know, there's all kinds of things that happen. Sooner or later, you'll have a chance. Yes.
Did I hear you suggest incorporating a label of a sensation or feeling into the breath? I heard you say itch. I was wondering, in, out, you might use the label as you're breathing.
Yeah, yes. But when you're breathing, some people find it useful to label the in-breath in, the out-breath out. Or the classically, in our tradition, it's actually, you say, rising as the stomach or the chest rises, falling as you're there watching the falling. And the label is not that important. You'll be very careful it doesn't become mechanical labeling. And then what you're doing is you stop meditating, but rather just labeling. The labeling is this little kind of 95% of what we're trying to do is to really be present for the experience of breathing. And then 5% is a little like this little gentle nudge. Stay there. But you know, rising, falling, in, out. Yes, please.
When I tune myself to being mindful or receptive about my emotions, I typically tend to fall asleep. No, I'm serious, and very often I'm awoken by the sound of my own snoring.
Yeah.
Now, this might sound like a second arrow, but I think it's true, and that is, how do I know that I'm not using sleep as a defense mechanism to avoid feeling?
It's not uncommon for people to experience that people actually fall asleep. Sometimes there's strong emotions or memories or trauma that comes up that we're not ready to deal with, and so we fall asleep. And I have a lot of respect for the inner wisdom that says, I'm not ready for this yet. So I'm not so keen on pushing through it. If you keep meditating, slowly over time it'll work itself out. When you do wake up from that falling asleep, then spend a little time checking in what just happened. And slowly you might kind of open up to that area. And probably you need to develop some confidence and trust and sense of safety for this deeper stuff to begin finally to show itself. If you feel like it continues to be a really ongoing issue that lasts for a long time, then you might want to go spend some time with someone like a therapist, where you actually have on a regular basis is exploring and using talking as a way of kind of finding your way in. Or another way is to go, there's certain body-based psychotherapies where they actually use the body is a fantastic avenue into the subconscious areas of our minds. So body-based therapy, they tune you into your body, and it's difficult to fall asleep if you have a therapist right there in your body. And a skilled therapist can help guide you and create the safe container for you to kind of open up to these things, if that's the case. Yes, you, yes.
Yeah, I have a couple of impressions, and tell me if I'm on the right track with these. That first off, when you say that maybe try to soften the belly, it seems that if I kind of tell the belly to soften, it doesn't want to, but if I kind of invite it, soften, it seems to
beautiful,
happen.
Beautiful.
Okay. And then another is you had mentioned about emotion to kind of acknowledge that it's there, and that very often what can happen is that it can kind of lose some of its energy or power.
Well, the power that comes from identification, from being locked into it and reactive to it and saying it's me and my feeling or whatever.
Okay, so it's the impression I have there is that and tell me if I'm on the right track here, is that if I do that with the intention of causing some anxiety or anger to dissipate, that somehow it kind of doesn't want to do that. But if I just do it for the sake of doing it and looking at it, then maybe it will dissipate.
Perfect.
Okay.
Perfect. Yeah, when you do meditation, this kind of meditation here, you're really best off not trying to fix or change or want anything to be different than what it is. It's a training in how to be present for things as they are. And as you do that, you'll become aware of all the forces in the mind which says, no, things as they are not the way it should be. I want it differently. And especially this is especially useful for people who spend their whole day in reactive mode. always fixing and changing and engineering things to, just to suit their, you know, themselves. And so that's very powerful to stop doing that and just be. Just be with what is and see what happens. And I think it's very respectful of our inner life to just to be very attentive, listen carefully, make space for it, and see what wants to bubble up. Our poor little mind doesn't have a good sense of what's really going on here in this world, in ourself. And if we think that we know what's happening and that we know what's supposed to happen, you're going to miss out some of the deeper movements. You know, we don't, you know, I keep wanting to use the word soul, deeper movements of the soul. The problem with that word is that Buddhists don't believe in soul. But, you know, something like that.
Thank you.
So there is this handout with where some of these instructions are given again, and also some exercises you might do around emotions, and maybe that's useful for you. As I said earlier, there's a kind of progression here that goes on, and the better you're able to kind of be in your body and know how to be mindful of your body, the easier it is to pay attention to emotions. Because as I pointed out today, one of the ways to bring mindfulness to emotions is to feel how it's manifested in the body. And if you know how to connect to your body, it's easier to be with the emotion. In the same way, the more you're capable of being with your body, and the more you have a stronger capacity of mindfulness for emotions, the easier it's going to be mindful of thinking. Often we think of thinking perhaps as being kind of disembodied or disconnected, kind of free-floating kind of thing. But thinking is often very deeply connected to the emotions and to the body. And as we kind of go into the emotion, the thinking next week, we'll build on the foundation of what we've talked about so far. So enjoy your week, and may you be disciplined enough. Thank you.